Blog Talk Radio.
You ready to rock this town by now?
One thing. Hold on. That's for Sunday's show. Why did you do that? Okay, never mind. Hello, this is Carl from Deviant Legion and, of course, Incredibly Strange Films and Film and Stuff. Nice to have you with us as we start to end up our Black History Month. We are going to be talking about Black actors and actresses, both famous and a little bit underrated. And with me today is Tim Wickens. Tim, say hello.
Hello, everyone out there in podcast land.
Boy, you're so chipper from Boston. Good Lord. And
yeah, Boston.
It's a lot of Boston.
You know, whatever. You know, you might want to take your meds, Tim. I'm just saying. Anyway, and we also have Robert Walker with us. Robert is a filmmaker and good friend of the podcast. Glad to have you back, Robert.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me again. And I'm excited about this particular subject we're talking about.
Okay, so Robert, we'll start with you. You know, actor or actress that you like to talk about, African-American, you know, however you want me to say it.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Since we're talking about this today, I was thinking it would be a cool thing to talk about one of the first successful African-American or / black actors in America. His name was Stephen Fetchit.
Nice.
And you know who I'm talking about, right?
Oh, I know
and
exactly who Stephen Fetchit is.
Right. He was a comedian and film actor, and he's of Jamaican and Bahamian descent, and he was considered the first black actor to have a successful film career. And he was born in 2000. He was born in 1902 in Key West, and he died November 19th, 1985, Woodland Hills, Los Angeles. And he did a plethora of films he starred in. He did films like Judas Priest, The Sun Shines Bright, Dixie Hart, Charlie Chan in Egypt. He did new films with Shirley Temple, Bend the River and all that stuff that I'm looking at now. You just look him up. And he was the first actor to really, black actor, to really be successful and have a lucrative career financially as the first black actor, even before Sidney Poitier. So that's something that people can look into. And if y'all want to add to it, if you have more information on him about it.
Probably best known for his Dance Down the Stairs with Shirley Temple on Dimples.
Yeah.
That's what I most remember him by.
Me too.
You know?
He unfortunately gets a bad rap nowadays, kind of.
What happened?
Well, he's one of those guys that kind of has gotten a bad rap in the last, 50 years, maybe? It's
yeah,
kind of unfortunate.
He's like a Sambo.
Yeah,
that type of thing. But he was the first actor to break through, male actor to break through Hollywood. Like, of course, it was a different time then.
Exactly.
You can't judge him by today's standards. Like, you can't do that.
That's what people do. I mean, even in the 60s and stuff, you know, it's like they try to say, put him in the time of the 1960s and say, but, you know, that was a different time period, unfortunately. You know what I mean? He was trying to make a living. He's a funny guy. He's actually a very intelligent man. And it's too bad that they get, you know, look at the prism of a modern time, we'll say.
Right. You know, the other thing, too, is don't forget that he did a lot of what were called race films. So he was one of the first ones to basically do films for the black audiences back then, and that were primarily you know shown in like Harlem and in black urban areas. So you know we might, from a modern perspective, consider him a Sambo, but that's what he was able to do in regular films. But you've got to look also what he did in race films. You know, he, you know, there was a race film that he did that he actually played George Bernard Shaw.
Oh, wow.
Okay. You know, and that was all black cast. So let's, you know, put context in with it. So yeah,
exactly.
Good choice. Good choice, Robert.
Yeah.
All right, Tim, we're going to go over to you.
Oh, man. So I wasn't thinking of this person, but now that we're kind of going way back, Mantan Moreland came into my mind when I was talking about Step and Fetch It. I mean, here's a guy that, like, burst on the scene in Charlie Chan movies. The Three Stooges, Mo Howard, wanted him to replace Shaq to be one of the Stooges to integrate the Three Stooges. I mean, he made movies up until the 70s, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Comedy album. I mean, here's someone that kind of, another one, is kind of forgotten today. But, I mean, he just, like, kept on working and working all the way through. Was with Bela Lugosi in a movie. I mean, impressive.
Well, the thing about Mantan Moreland, which I really, really like, he's in one of my favorite films, and that's Spider-Baby.
Oh, wow.
He's in Spider-Baby.
Yeah, he is in that. Okay, I totally. So I mean, his career lasted so long. I mean, I believe he started in the 30s, maybe early 40s,
mm-hmm.
and he made films right up to the end. I think he even started doing some comedy albums in the that were kind of popular in the 60s, 50s, early 60s.
Yeah, late 50s, early 60s. He also is the first black actor to actually have a movie named after him.
Yes,
really?
Which is Mantan Runs for Mayor. Again, a race film from 1947 or 46? 46. And then Mantan messes up. He had a whole series of them. You know, and these were short films. These were like 20 or 30-minute films. You know, but still, I mean, that very famous. Very, very famous. What do you know of him, Robert? Do you know anything of Mantan Moreland?
Well, I know that he was on the Three Stooges when, you know, you look on the Sunday morning and as a kid and mm-hmm. it was like black and white films. And I used to see him, you know, this black guy in these movies. And so he was another one that considered a minstrel or a Sambo as well. But if people need to understand, it was like the time, like what else could they do back then? Like, you know, as far as breaking through Hollywood during those times. So instead of, I guess, depicting them as like jokes or like a detriment to the community, they need to be more upheld because they broke through.
Absolutely,
the barrier of you know of an oppressed moment that black people had to experience. So, in
mm-hmm.
Hollywood, especially. So it's just that's basically what I know him. But what I'm reading here is that he starred in numerous films, and his daughter, Marcella mm-hmm. Moreland, appeared as a child in several of the films he was in as well. I don't know about her too much, but yeah, that's basically what I know him from. That's where my first experience of seeing this actor.
I know him best from the when I was a kid, they used to play the mystery movies on the old UHF Channel 38, WSBK here in Boston. They play mystery movies, they call them Sherlock Holmes, Charlie Chan. So he had a recurring mm-hmm. role in the Charlie Chan series as Birmingham Brown. And so that's where I kind of like, you know, he just, like I said, he was in a couple, I think two Bela Lugosi movies. But he was someone that was just kind of, you know, one of those faces, you'd be like, oh, it's, you know, it's that guy again. Maybe when you're a kid, you're like, who is this guy? And then later on, you're kind of, oh, man, Ken Marlin. Like, this, you know, like I said, he was in Watermelon Man by Melvin Peoples in what's that, 70, 1970? He had a small role in that?
Yep.
I mean, not a bad year from, like, 40s all the way to, like, the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going to talk about someone that I love. We're going to go into the 60s and 70s, which was basically my coming of age and loving the film.
Me and him are too old, not that old. Me and Mr. Walker are from the 30s, though.
Right?
But for me, I got to go. I remember seeing a film, and it was a funny film. It was a comedy. And it was called The President's Analyst.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
And okay. And this actor, is in it. And he's with James Coburn, and he's going psychoanalyst. And he does this speech about being young and being black. And what he went through, and it absolutely just floored me, even at that age. And then he became famous, more famous, for being in Cotton Comes to Harlem. Previous to he was a stand-up comedian in the 50s and 60s. Yeah. Of course, we're talking about Godfrey Cambridge. So what's your thoughts on Godfrey Cambridge? Robert, what's your thoughts?
My thoughts, I'm not that familiar with. I'm just looking them up now. So,
okay. So I'll go over to Tim as you look him up. Tim, what's your thoughts on Godfrey Cambridge?
So Godfrey Cambridge is one of those guys you see in a movie when you're younger and you're like, wow, he just really catches your eye. Just everything about him. I don't know what it is. He just has the personality, the charisma. I mean, he's like, I don't know. He's star material for me. He's a guy that he should be. And he passed away, and he was like, what, 43? I know he was young when he died. But, I mean, what?
Yeah, he
I
was
mean,
very young. He was in his 40s.
Just everything he's in, he takes over. I mean, I just rewatched Watermelon Man, and he is unbelievable at that. I mean, the film, he starts off as a white man who's pretty much a racist. And one morning he wakes up and he's black. And it just was just that transformation and everything he goes through and, like, you know, his humor. You know, like you said, he's a stand-up comic, so he can be very funny, but he can be very poignant. And that's just one of the great roles. And I came across this short film he produced and wrote called Dead is Dead. It was an anti-drug movie, it's kind of like pretty much an educational film. It's really hard-hitting. And, you know, he's on screen and he talks, and he's just so powerful in it. And the image, the images, it's definitely like that. You know, I believe, if I know the background correctly, two people he knew died of drug overdoses, and he really took this serious and even went around to schools. And this is, I believe, during the time when he hit it big the most when he was in Cotton Comes to Harlem and Come Back Charleston Blue. He was well-known, obviously, because he was a stand-up comic, but movie-wise, I think that was kind of his biggest role. But, I mean, this is a guy, I mean, Son of the Blob, he's hysterical in Cotton Comes to Harlem, he's great. Just a really, really great personality, great actor, great comedian. Oh, yeah, I'm so glad you picked him. He's one of my favorites.
Well, I need to tell you a couple of stories. So Watermelon Man was directed by Melvin Van Peebles. And wanted a white person to be in the role to go into blackface. And Melvin said, no way. No way are we doing that. And while you can't find a black person to pass for white, he says, try me. So he goes to Godfrey Cambridge, who he wanted for the role, and they got a special makeup, and they brought him in to meet with everyone. And Melvin played that he was white and he'd go into blackface, right? And everybody bought it. And then at the end of the meeting, he takes his makeup off in front of the people. And they looked at him and says, okay, you got the money.
No, oh, wow.
True story. True story.
And
the other thing about Godfrey Cambridge, too. Hold on, Tim. Hold on, Tim. Hold on. The other thing about Godfrey Cambridge is that he was an activist. He was on, I don't know if you remember William F. Buckley, but Buckley had a, was a Republican person who had this show called Firing Line, and he would get somebody else on there, and Godfrey Cambridge was on there like two or three times. And I studied William F. Buckley when I was in high school, you know, for debate, and the man was brilliant. And Godfrey Cambridge, absolutely toe-to-toe with William F. Buckley. And you can find those shows on YouTube. The man was amazing. And not just for his acting, but for his stand-up, for his political views, for making a point of the segregation of the black race at the time, because you know there were the race riots and Watts and so on and so forth. He picketed. He did everything he could. The man is someone you really need to know, Robert. Check him out for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah, he's definitely worth it. I mean, Cotton Comes to Harlem. Oh man, he's just so good in that. Just so good in that. Mm-hmm. And Watermelon Man is excellent. I rewatched it again recently, and it's supposed to be comedic too, but also it has a point and it's has a message. And the weird thing about
and
that movie,
I would also recommend highly The President's Analyst for that speech that I talked about.
That's a great movie.
Wow. So we're back to you, Robert.
Okay, I'm going to switch it up now.
Sure.
I'm going to do Viola Davis. She's like one of my favorite actresses of our time. We all know who she is, basically. And she has an interesting past because she was born in 1965 in South Carolina, and her mother was a strong activist of the Civil Rights Movement, and her mother got arrested when she was at a young age because she was protesting during that time, during the Civil Rights Movement. And that just shows you her character. And so she's a fighter, and she has a lot of she fights for what she believes in and things like that. But you can see that through her acting, like what she takes serious. And she got into acting to now being one of the award-winning actresses today that we know and love. And she played in a plethora of films. We all know she's a prolific actress, and she played in a lot of films. Like one of my best films, I think, of hers to me that she performed in was called Fences. And was the movie with Denzel Washington. Yeah. And that was a film with Denzel Washington, and that was really cool. And the other film I'm trying to think of where I saw her in, and she was with, what's that other famous actress's name? She's like the one that wins all the Emmys. She's white. What's the most famous actress that wins all the Academy Awards?
Meryl Streep?
Meryl Streep. She was in the film with Meryl Streep. I forget what the movie was, the name of the movie, but the movie was about a Catholic church where she was a nun, Meryl Streep.
Doubt.
Yeah, I think that was her breakout performance, because that's when I noticed her as a kid. And she was all over the place, and they were saying she was toe-to-toe with her. And then I saw The Help, which was a good film. She won an award for yep. that one. And then, but I think her best performance, I think, was Fences. And, of course, I'm a comic book fan, so she was is Amanda Waller now for the Suicide Squad. So, which she's a well – oh, and also the TV series that she's in, I love. I forgot what the name of it. It's about lawyers. It was a great TV series that she's on. Let me look it up first. Let me see if I can find it quick. How to Get Away with Murder. If you saw mm-hmm. that series, you saw great acting in that. And I really respect her as an actress. And she really feels the need of each character she plays. And she really goes deep and let out all the mess in her character. She's not. She's a very brave actress. And I really respect her actor.
Okay, so what do you think of Viola Davis, Jim?
Well, I really like, I love Fences. That was a movie I saw, I think when it first came out, what's it been, 4 years ago maybe now? And I
yeah.
just thought that was just an all-around great movie. I mean, just a,
right.
a story about a family, you know, relationships, struggles, I mean, my God, I mean, you know, we all know Denzel Washington's a great actor, and she more than
right.
held her own with him. And I mean, this is that's a movie I would highly recommend to anyone. That alone, that movie just kind of, I heard so much about it, and it was one of those movies, like, I cannot wait to see this film, and it did not disappoint. So, go out and see Fences.
Do you think
mm-hmm.
they got robbed
for me,
of academies during that year?
What the heck?
Yeah,
I'm not a big Oscar guy, kind of, but, I mean, it should have. Did it even get nominated? It probably didn't even get nominated. So, I mean.
I don't think she got nominated. Denzel did, but she didn't, I don't think.
Oh,
I don't
God,
remember.
Really? No, she totally
but,
got
yeah,
robbed if she didn't. Yeah, just great performances right there in that film.
Right?
I'll tell you, the first time I saw Viola Davis, I saw her in a remake of one of my favorite films. Called Solaris, which was Steven Soderbergh,
yeah.
and it's a science fiction film. And that was the
Solaris?
First time I ever saw Viola Davis. And at the end of that movie, I just said to myself, that woman is going to make it. That woman is good. She's real good, and she is. And ever since then, I've been just so pleased with what a great actress that woman is. But I remember seeing her for the first time in her first major film, and it was just like, oh, my God, she's good. Yeah, yeah. Good choice. Good choice, Robert. So we're going to go back to you, Tim. And who you got?
So I'm a big fan of actor-directors. I like Cornel Wilde a lot. He didn't direct a lot of movies, but I really enjoy his films, No Blade of Grass, The Naked Naked Prey, Beach Red. So I'm going to pick Ivan Dixon, who best known, of course, for Hogan's Heroes, but he
– Hold on. I'm applauding because I talked about Ivan Dixon in the director's one. Good choice.
You did.
Oh, wow. I'm glad
I did.
So before I get into his directing, I mean, he was with Sidney Poitier in Apache Blue, great movie. He was in A Raisin in the Sun, Acid Guy. He Something of Value with Poitier. Then on his own, he made Nothing But a Man. I don't know if anyone's seen that movie. I think it's from 1963.
Oh, it's an amazing film. Amazing film.
I mean, he's from the South. He has a problem with, you know, he has a relationship problems with his father, his own relationships. Just a human story, you know what I mean? Something we can all relate to in a way. And he's just so great in that. And it's just one of those movies that then kind of got lost in time. And I saw it back in the day when American Movie Classics actually played movies. And I was like, wow, this movie is unbelievable. But then he got to direct, I forgot the Robert Hooks movie. Why am I?
Trouble Man.
Oh, my
Trouble
God.
Man.
Yeah, Trouble
Man.
With the great Marvin Gaye soundtrack. great blaxploitation film. Robert Hooks, an unbelievable actor, and one of the movies I just rewatched again, The Spook Who Sat by the Door, which was written by I think his name is Sam Greenlee.
Brownlee is the last name. I think Herbert, but it's Brownlee. Brownlee.
Okay, he tried to get this book published. It wouldn't get published. It finally got published. It was 1968. It gets published in England. Finally makes it across here. They decided, him and Ivan Dixon decided to make a movie of it. It's basically about the CIA wants to integrate. Well, the senator wants to integrate just to get the black vote. And the man that makes it through is really a black nationalist. So he takes all of what he's learned and he gives it back to the black community to take it to the man and assert their rights. Great film. It comes out and the CIA, FBI, and everyone tries to squash it. But I mean,
wow.
Oh my God. I mean, again, Ivan Dixon, just great there, great in his movie roles. I mean, he's a guy. Oh yeah. I mean, like I said, you got to see, if you ever see Nothing But a Man, that is a movie I highly recommend. Trouble Man as well. Really pretty good blaxploitation film.
Absolutely.
Cool.
See, the one thing about The Spook Who Sat by the Door, pardon me, I just saw this today. Bill Duke does a short thing on it on Trailers from Hell, and basically he says, how the hell did this movie get financed? Seriously. You know, because it's back at the time. It's, what, 73, I think it came out? You know, where you have, you still have,
right?
You know, black rights and so on and so forth, and civil rights, and this is very anti-American in many, many ways. And it's a brutal film, and it's brilliant. It's a brilliant film.
Well, it got
and by the way,
it got buried, and I think was almost lost to time. I think Ivan Dixon had owned the only real copy of it until I think it was bootlegged around, but until the 90s or early 2000s, acted.
It was 2004, 2005 that finally came out.
It came on DVD, you know?
The soundtrack was by Herbie Hancock too.
Yes,
and the soundtrack
is
absolutely brilliant. Yeah. So
wow.
Just wanted to say that I have that soundtrack in my collection. So
I do.
So I'm going to talk about one of my favorite actors, and this is a guy that. Was primarily a stage actor, but he did a lot of film. One of his first major films was Black Like Me, with James Whitmore being a white person who passes black, and this gentleman who I'm talking about is sort of his friend and introduces him to the black neighborhood and so on and so forth. He also did a film called The Comedians, where he basically was third billed behind Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor, okay. But he did, and then he did a film, a proto blaxploitation film directed by Jules Dassin called Uptight, which is absolutely brilliant. It's basically a remake of The Informer by John Ford, only set in the black neighborhood. Jules Dassin, if you're not familiar with him, was an American, a French extract, but was left for Europe because he was targeted by UAC in the 50s. And he came back to the U.S. This was his first U.S. film, and that's 1968. But Roscoe Lee Brown is probably best known as Jacob Neitlinger, the cook, and John Wayne's The Cowboys. And also let's not forget another great film that he did was William Wyler as director of The Liberation of L.B. Jones. But later in his career, he was basically known as the narrator for the Babe movies, the Talking Pig movies. He was also in Uptown Saturday Night. He was the robot in Logan's Run. He had a nice role in Twilight's Last Gleaming. Just a great, great actor. And, actually acted with Whoopi Goldberg in Jumpin' Jack Flash. He's still acting as of today on several TV shows. I mean, he's really doing a lot. Lately, let me just see. Actually, his last film was 2007, where he was the narrator to Epic Movie, God help us all. But anyway. So what do you guys know of Roscoe Lee Brown? I'll go with you, Tim, first.
Oh, man. So you left out two big things about him. You left out he's probably has the best scene in Alfred Hitchcock's movie Topaz.
Yes, he does.
Have you ever seen that movie? Topaz is called. It's a spy film. And Roscoe Lee Brown is what's he doing? He's kind of like a spy in it, and he takes photos. I think it's supposed to be set in New York or a major town, and he has to like run out. It's like a whole chase scene through the streets, and his undercover job is a florist, and it's like one of the best chase scenes filmed. I just think it's really well done. I mean, Roscoe Lee Brown is kind of known for his. I mean, here's a guy that you see and you hear, you know. This guy's royalty or aristocracy or something, because he just has that air of him. He's just unbelievable. I mean, everything he was ever in, I thought he was best known for Soap. Wasn't he in the TV series Soap?
Yes, he was a butler. Yeah.
No, that was Robert Guillaume. That was Robert Guillaume.
Oh, okay.
That was not Roscoe
Lee
Brown.
I thought he was in it afterwards.
Oh, okay.
But, The Liberation of L.B. Jones, it's probably the biggest role he's had in the film. I mean, I have a little kind of issues with the movie, but I think he's excellent in it, as is Yaphet Kotto, who's in it. But, yeah, he's just a man that just like James Earl Jones, just someone's like, wow, you just want to listen to him and be in awe of him, just the way he talks and in his mannerisms.
Oh, yeah, he was in Soap. His name was Saunders.
Oh, he took over for Guillaume.
I think so, yeah. I'm looking at it now up his IMDb. So it's just like he did a lot. I thought he was in – wasn't he in a 007 film? I thought I saw him there. Maybe I'm thinking about somebody else.
No. He wasn't.
He was in Logan's Run. I see.
Yes.
And I saw that. His face is so familiar. He also played Benson on the TV series. And,
yeah, he was in that.
He what?
Him and Robert Jordan seemed to be following each other in the 70s for a little bit there.
Yeah, I think I get those two mixed up a lot. I've seen his face a lot in films. You know what I mean? It's like one of those guys growing up, you know, seeing like old films and stuff like that. And then, he's in a lot of stuff. I remember seeing his face, and he does have a very authoritative and a distinctive voice. He did do a lot of voiceovers. Now he's doing a lot of voiceovers now, right? Oh, no, wait a minute. Yeah, additional voices. I'm looking at voiceover because I was like, he seems like he would do a lot of, like, animations and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah, like Spider-Man, and he has Static Shock. Yeah, he does a lot of voiceovers now recently and things, and he has a very distinctive look. And he plays he's very much a strong character actor. Like, he can go from playing a villain to a school teacher. You know what I mean? Like, he could play, you know, he could, you know, can change his character. You know how you have personality actors? That's a good personality actor. Someone that you like to see act, but they stay the kind of the same character in every character. But he could, morph and change into different types of characters that was believable, I think.
Totally
well,
agree.
Well, you know, I agree, too. But the role I really recommend, and the one that always has stuck with me with Roscoe Lee Brown, is Jedediah Nightlinger in The Cowboys. He's just phenomenal.
Yeah.
And he goes toe-to-toe with not only John Wayne, but Bruce friggin' Dern.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah. It's weird to see, he's right. He is such a character actor, but it's kind of, you know, because of his bearing and everything. It's weird to see him in that role, but he totally fits that role. Just like you mentioned Black Like Me. First scene is, I can't remember if he's a drunk or if he has, mental illness or something, but it's like, what the heck? This is Roscoe Lee Brown. I mean, this is, his earliest role. It's like, he totally has range.
Absolutely. And he was basically a stage actor more than anything else.
He seemed like he would appear as more of a stage actor because that was his aura, I feel.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, there's Roscoe Lee Brown. We're going to go back to you, Robert. Who do you have next that you want to talk about?
My next actor I want to talk about, I think he's so underrated. And his name is Jeffrey Wright. Are you familiar with him?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah,
that's
Jeffrey
freaking
Wright. Yeah, I think he's such an amazing actor. I think the film I saw him in that really was that I discovered him in was, I think it was the remake of Shaft. What's the name was in it, and he played the drug dealer, the Hispanic drug dealer. And he was so intense and real and just he was so in the character. And just from that one performance, I noticed everything he's acting in. And, you know, right now he's acting in Westworld, which is a great series, on HBO. And, you know, he also has a great voice, too. He does a lot of voiceovers and things like that. But when I saw that, I thought he was such an amazing actor and things. So, and he's a very prolific one, too, because he acted in so many different projects, playing so many different characters. Talking about character actors, he's definitely one of the extreme character actors out there. And I really respect him and his work, and I kind of idolize him in a way because, you know, as an actor myself, I look for the need and intensity of a character that I'm playing and try to be the character instead of act the character, and I think he embodies that process to the hilt. So I think he's one of my favorite actors, my top 10. But I think he's so underrated, and I think he's so looked over for some reason. But yeah, you know anything about him? Or you want to, have any thoughts?
Go ahead, Tim.
Wait, we're talking about Jeffrey Holder?
No,
Jeffrey Wright.
Well, Jeffrey, I'm not familiar. I got to look him up.
You know,
Felix Leiter. He does Felix Leiter in all the Daniel Craig films. He was
He played Commissioner Gordon in James Gordon in Batman.
I'm a little familiar with him.
Westworld, have you seen Westworld? Yeah.
Yeah,
he was played Bernard Lowe.
He's one of the main characters in Westworld. I got to know him first in Basquiat, where he played Jean-Michel Basquiat, an artist who died very young.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
I told him. All right. Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah, Biosphere.
Okay,
yeah,
and the other thing, too, that I remember him from, well, he was actually in Kenneth Branagh's Hamlet, too. He was the grave digger. Angels in America. He was Belice in Angels in America. Or Mr.
Yeah,
Wise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing I really remember him in, he has a elongated scene in Jim Jarmusch's Broken Flowers, which is one of my favorite films. And he's just phenomenal in that. And then, of course, Syrietta, too. And then Lady in the Water, he has a supporting role in that, and he's very good in that, too. He's just an amazing actor. He's not a star, but he's a character actor, and he just does extremely good work. He really does.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think he's underrated, or should he be more celebrated?
I think people know who he is now, and I don't think he's underrated.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not forget he was the narrator in the recent series What If?
Yeah.
Okay, and he's in the Batman now. He's got a number of movies that are happening, but with What If and Westworld and Felix Leiter and all the Daniel Craig movies, people know who he is, but he's not a star. He's not Denzel, for example.
Right.
He's one of the faces that you kind of forget who he is. Not forget who he is, but you kind of don't recall his name. Because I was like,
Denzel.
Yeah.
You know, and he's in
he's
the French
as good looking as
too,
Denzel.
Which I've not seen. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's one of those guys. So, Tim, now you. So who do you have, Tim?
All right, let's go. I wanted to let's go way back to one of the all-time greats in Paul Robeson, All-American football player, lawyer, I mean, athlete, scholar,
who
singer.
What's his name?
Civil act, Paul Robeson.
Paul Robeson, okay.
Yeah, if you don't know who he is, Robert, you need to check him out, because without Paul Robeson, you wouldn't have
– Oh, man.
You would have black actors and Broadway, basically. The man was basically best known for Showboat, but he was a political activist, too, and he got a lot of crap for that, to say the least. He did not have to do a lot, unfortunately. But a phenomenal
actor. He only
has,
like, 13 credits. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was blacklisted, so he was totally, like, I mean, he did a lot of stage acting as well, and he did some work over in Europe, mostly England. I mean, I remember him from the movie The Emperor Jones, which was a stage play, and then he starred in the movie role as well. And great singer. I think I lost it when I moved from San Francisco back to Boston, but I had like a collection of his songs. He sings in many different languages. You know, visited the Soviet Union back in the day. I mean, just unbelievable. I mean, it just an astronomical figure in oh my God, civil rights, in acting, in singing. I mean, this is a guy that could do it. Like I said, he was even a college football star. I mean, this guy is someone that could do it all. I mean, just unbelievable. And this country just tried to like crush him, really. And The Emperor Jones is one of the first movies I saw of him when I was a kid. And then they had this documentary, which I cannot recall the name of, and that just blew my mind because, you know, I didn't know anything about this man. It's like, oh, my God. And they're just trying to just kill him, basically. They don't want him to work. He can't leave the country. And he's like a figure that's loved internationally. He had songs he'd sung in Chinese. Like I say, he did the song of the Boatman, which is a Russian song. I think, what's that song? Song of Freedom he sang. Oh, he's just a huge star above not just African-Americans, but everyone. I mean, he's a guy that everyone should know. I mean, it's unfortunate he wasn't in a lot of movies. Showboat, as Carl mentioned, is his, you know, one of his best-known roles. I believe he was the first black actor to play the role of Othello on the stage. And there was a, there used to be a recording you know, a record, vinyl record of his performance or some of the speeches of Othello by him. And there's a clip I know on YouTube where he's being interviewed, I believe it's in England, about the role at the time. I believe it might have been like the 1950s did it, but just, yeah, if you definitely got to, if you don't, anyone who's listening, if you don't know Paul Robeson, definitely check him out. He's definitely well worth it. Listen to his music. He's got a beautiful singing voice. I mean, like I said, here's a guy that just was, I mean, his whole body was talent. He just had nothing but talent. Unbelievable person.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. I'm going to definitely pick, because I know he played with, Showboat was with Hattie McDowell. And,
well-known nowadays either, so, I mean, it's, which is too bad, but.
Cool, I'll definitely look him up, maybe if, definitely.
Okay, so I guess it's my turn, and I'm going to talk about one of my favorite female black actresses. And no, it's, we're talking a character actress here. It's not Pam Grier. So I will always worship at the altar of Pam Grier. I do have a quick story about Pam Grier. I went to see Bones, and I was living in Maryland, and went to the theater.
Mm-hmm.
There was only one other person in the theater, and it was a black gentleman, mid-40s, mid-50s, somewhere in there. And he looked at me like, what are you doing here? And I think he actually said, are you sure you're in the right theater? I says, well, this is the movie with Pam Grier, yes? And he's like, whoa, you know Pam Grier? We ended up sitting together just talking about black exploitation films and Pam Grier and yelling at the theater at the movie, and it was one of the best times I've ever had in a theater in my life. So that's my Pam Grier story.
That's awesome.
But I'm going to talk about CCH Pounder.
Oh,
okay?
Wow.
Now,
yeah.
I love this woman. Okay, I truly do. Remember, first thing I remember her in was Baghdad Cafe, the Percy Adlin film.
Yeah. Yep.
I know that film.
Yeah, she's just phenomenal in that. And then, as you go on, I saw her in several TV things and so on and so forth, like Quantum Leap. She's in Psycho 4, The Beginning. But just an incredible actress. She's in Benny and June, which is one of my favorite films. And, yes, she's even in RoboCop 3, but she's the best thing in RoboCop 3.
you
got to
get work where you can find it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I'll tell you, one of the things about her that I loved is Warehouse 13. She's just so good in Warehouse 13. She's in several TV series just amazing. She does a lot of voiceover work. She was in Law and Order Special Victims Unit, NCIS, as I said, Warehouse at 13, and then Sons of Anarchy. She's just Ty Patterson on Sons of Anarchy is just amazing.
Awesome. Yeah, I love that.
You know, but this is a woman. Now, I got to mention, my ex-wife and I got into an argument. And it was, who would do better at a staring contest? And the next person I'll mention as it goes around is this other actress. And she said, and I said, who would do better in a staring contest, CCH Pounder or Lynn Thigpen? I voted for Thigpen. She voted for Pounder. She won. That's just what it is.
Yeah, the eyes have it. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So what do you think of CCH Pounder?
I think she's a phenomenal. Like I said, my most recent knowledge of her, of when I seen her, was in Sons of Anarchy. I love that series too, by the way. And I thought she was phenomenal. I thought she was great as Tyne Patterson. I thought she was a great fixture and a great pick for that role to play. And she's very well-prepared. She's very well-versed in her characters. I love her wit and her choices and her acting, and I think she's great. I mean, and I know she's done a lot of voiceovers as well. She has a great voice as well as many other actors we've mentioned earlier. And she's done a lot of voiceovers for animations, more for like Batman and comic book series type animations. But she's a great actress as well. So I think she's a great female character actor, and she played a lot of roles, and she's very, very well competent in basically any character she can play.
Mm-hmm. And how about you, Tim? What do you think of CCH Pounder?
Baghdad Cafe alone, I mean, that there is just a career defining moment. I actually thought she was in a lot more movies. She was also in a pretty good TV movie called Hotel on the Mountain, an adaptation of James Baldwin's novel. But, I mean, yeah, she's
right.
Someone that just is a strong – I mean, I remember Benny June, as you mentioned. I mean, just a great character actress who really got to shine. I mean, she got to shine in a lot of TV series. But I think Baghdad Cafe is like, oh, my God, just unbelievable.
And by the way, just so you guys know, she's also in all the Avatars. So Avatar, she's in the original Avatar. She's in Avatar 2, which is in post-production. She's filming 3, 4, and 5 right now. So, yeah.
So she's
in all the Avatars.
Now.
Yeah.
She's making big bucks now, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so I guess it's back to you, Robert. Do you have anyone else for us?
I'm going to reach a little back, not back. He just recently died. But his name is Clarence Williams III.
Oh, yes.
You know who
okay,
that is?
Sorry, I have to say something here. Fuck yes. I love that man.
There might be children listening to this.
And I remember him from the Mod Squad, and he was such a cool character there. And from looking at the Mod, not that I was around during the Mod Squad, but I saw remakes of it, and my mom used to talk about, my dad used to talk about the Mod Squad, and I took a look at it when they do reruns of the series, and it was very rare back in those times to see a strong black character like that on a regular television series. And he's just up to now, he's a very extreme, amazing actor, and things I've seen him in was Lee Daniels, The Butler. What was another one I saw him in that was very, he was like so believable. I think Stop 62 or something like that with Anne Margaret or something. And just so many other films that I seen. He's another very intense actor. And, he was also in Tales from the Hood. Sugar Hill and he also plays scary characters and almost villainous characters very well, and I've seen him in a number of those things, but I know him as an actor, and he grew up with a very musical enhanced family. Like his mother and his father was a great musician and musician writer and things like that. And so when he grew up around jazz and his father played jazz and everything, was a jazz musician. But I think he's another one that was, to me, underrated as well. I think he should have been more celebrated in Hollywood because he had all the fixings to me. He had the look, he had the charisma, and he had the talent. And to, to be a star, I think. Like as big as Denzel Washington, but I think he was just probably during that time he wasn't born at the right moment or something like that because of the things that were established back during that time. What do you guys think of him?
Tim, I'll let you go first, and I got stories.
He burst on the scene. I mean, I was either not born or too young for the Mod Squad, but of course I'm part of it. But I mean, he just burst on the scene with that thing. He was like, young, handsome, and smooth. You know what I mean? Like that whole cast was in that series. I mean, he's the guy that's in so many movies, and you're like, oh my God, in the end, you're like, that's Clarence Williams III, because he just seems to either be so, like you were saying, a very serious actor or something like some of the horror movies, like Tales of the Hood. He's great in it, but he's also so, like, kind of, a little hammy. I mean, it's meant to be that way. But, yeah, he's just one of those ones you just, like, an actor you really like, and I enjoy his performances. And he pops up in so many different movies.
Well, I think the first role that really brought him back from the Mod Squad, now, I grew up with the Mod Squad. Okay, so I'm older than you guys, and I love that show. But the first role that brought him back into the consciousness is Purple Rain. He played the father of Prince, and he was brilliant.
Oh, my God.
In that. Okay, and talking about playing a bad guy, 52 Pickup, if you've never seen that, I don't know who's the – well, actually, John Glover is the really bad guy, but
yeah.
Clarence Williams does it extremely well. He's also in one of my favorite, I guess you would call it a guilty pleasure, Maniac Cop 2, which I just friggin' love. But the movie I want to talk about Clarence Williams III, is Deep Cover. Have either of you seen Deep Cover?
I've heard of
Lawrence Fishburne? Lawrence Fishburne movie?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen it, but...
Okay, so Lawrence Fishburne is this undercover cop who goes in to basically bring down this drug cartel. And so he's playing this role, but he's a cop, but other people don't know he's a cop. And Clarence Williams III is a cop that's also going after this group. And so he pulls in Lawrence Fishburne on a minor drug thing. And you see Fishburne there, and he's playing the role. And you could tell that Fishburne is expecting something. And so what Clarence Williams did is he talked to the director, who was Bill Duke, said, I want to play this differently and see if this works. And if it does, then this is the way I want to play it throughout the film, and you may have to rewrite it. And Duke said, go for it. So Fishburne doesn't know this is happening. And if you look at Fishburne's eyes during this scene that I'm going to describe, you can tell, like, where the fuck is he going with this? Because Clarence Williams comes in and he just – pops down, he pulls out his hands, he says, this is my daughter. This is my son. This is my faith. I am a Christian. And what you are doing are hurting my... And you could tell that Fishburne isn't expecting this at all. And so that whole scene is improvised. And
oh,
it is brilliant.
Beautiful.
It is brilliant, and it's a superb role for both of them, and it's a film that I absolutely recommend. If you have never seen Deep Cover, you need to. And by the way, it's probably Jeff Goldblum's best role.
Really?
Seriously.
Wow.
Yes. Now you've seen that, right, Tim?
I have, but it's been so – I saw it probably when it first came out to, like, this is what? Early, this is a 90s film, right? So I probably saw it when it first came out to VHS. So, I mean, I remember I really enjoyed it, but I've only seen it the one time.
Well, what I will tell you now is that it's been re-released in 4K restoration from Criterion.
Oh.
And
damn, really?
You need to get it.
Wow.
Yes. So if you have the Criterion channel, you can watch it. Okay?
It's on my list to see then.
But seriously, if you have not, and it is his best role. And the other thing I have to say is Tales from the Hood. You tell that Clarence Williams III
that's what I remember
is having
too.
A fucking blast with that role. And he just plays it so beautifully. I love it. I love that movie. And I'll tell you what. These days, you know, he passed away, what, about a year or so ago? I remember we did a memorial podcast. And we did a memorial podcast for him, and it's just like the comments I got and the people I had on, trust me, he is considered a top actor. And he's well known and well loved. Seriously. So yeah, he's a good one. He's a good one.
Awesome.
So now to you, Tim. We're going to go one more around. So Tim, to you. Who do you got?
Okay. So I got to go with. Oh man. So I have these. I'll consider her one of the two women that I kind of think that other people probably don't find are attractive, but I really think are gorgeous. Eleanor Braun is one, and this woman, Diana Sands, who played Benita Younger in Raising the Sun, I just like, oh, man, I just have the hots for her big time. Sorry out there in podcast land. I just think she's gorgeous and she is so great in the role of Benita in Raising the Sun. She's great in the movie. I'm sure you like Carl, The Landlord by Hal Ashby.
I love The Landlord, and she is great in The Landlord. That was her last role, I think. She died young.
No. Still early on. She died really young. I think she had pancreatic cancer. I think she died in like 71 or something, or 73.
Yeah, exactly.
But
I think that was her last film. I'm not sure, but I'm looking now. No, it wasn't her last film. Yeah.
She was in the movie Willie Dynamite. I don't know if you've ever seen that with, what's his name in Sesame Street? He's Willie Dynamite. I can't hear his name. But you know what I'm talking about. Roscoe Orman is
Willie
in real
Dynamite.
Life.
Yeah, Roscoe
Willie
Orman.
Willie
Dynamite.
And I just saw this movie for the first time. It's a movie, the screenplay is by Maya Angelou. The music is by Maya Angelou. It's a Swedish-American production. And the film is called Georgia, Georgia with Dirk Benedict in his first role. And Diana Sands plays like pretty much like a diva, a singer. She's on tour in Sweden in the deserter community there from Vietnam. They happen to be African Americans. They're trying to get her to support them. And she's just kind of like, she's just a diva. She's just in her own little world. But, oh, my God, I mean, a Maya Angelou written film, she is so freaking good in this movie. I was just blown. It's on YouTube. It's not the greatest quality, and it's cut into parts. But, yeah, she is just someone that I really – I mean, she's known more probably for her stage work. She was going to be in the movie Claudine, but until she became ill, and Diane Carroll took it over. But just a great, great actress, and like I said, someone I just find, like, absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, without a doubt.
She is a beautiful woman. Like, I'm looking her up, and she played in a movie like she did, her last movie was like a Pam Grier-ish movie called Honey Baby, Honey Baby, which I'm going to watch. I'm trying to find what
I'm
that is.
I'm going to watch it too. I haven't seen it yet.
But I would recommend very highly The Landlord.
Oh,
The Landlord, just so you know, was written by a guy by the name of Bill Gunn. Bill Gunn gave us one of the great art horror movies of the 70s, and that would be Gonja and Hess.
Cool.
He also wrote one of my favorite films called The Angel Levine, it's Cyril Moxell with Harry Belafonte and that's a wonderful film.
Wow.
Yeah, Bill Gunn wrote
great
that.
Great movie. Oh,
yeah.
My God. I didn't know that.
So anyway, The Landlord is something that you need to see. It's a brilliant film.
Definitely.
And
the first film that Hal Ashby directed, too, who's one of my favorite directors of the 70s. So I was thinking here, let's talk about Lynn Thigpen, because I talked about CCH Pounder. Lynn Thigpen was a stage actress, and she was in the original cast of Godspell. And her first film was the filming of Godspell. And she's in that film. She does really, really well in that. But what you're basically best known for is Carmen Sandiego. She played the chief.
Oh, my God, yes. Yes.
Okay,
oh,
but she also, well, let me put it this way. Her lips co-starred her second film, which was The Warriors. You never see her face, but you see her lips.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yes. Jesus. I didn't realize that.
Okay.
I saw it.
Okay. Then she's in Tootsie. She has a small role in Tootsie. But she's all over the place. She played in a two-parter in The Equalizer. Running on Empty, Lean on Me. She was, she was the love, not Denzel. It's,
no,
he started
yeah.
in Lean on Me.
Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman. She was Morgan Freeman's love interest in that. Okay.
Oh,
Lynn
Thigpen.
Well,
she
had
stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just an amazing actress. And unfortunately, she passed away not too long ago. But she was in Bob Roberts. And as I said, she was the chief in Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego. She had a nice run on Homicide, Life in the Street in a three-parter. She ended up doing Aunt Grace in All My Children.
All My Children.
And then she was in The District, too, for like 68 episodes. So, you know, I mean, she was a really good actress. And I always liked her. And, of course, you know, if you ever watch Carmen Sandiego,
yep.
you'll never forget her as the chief. Seriously. But I really liked her. I really liked her. And in many ways, I think she and CCH Pounder have sort of the same niche, right? If one didn't get
that's
the role, the other one did, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I said, you know, to my ex-wife, I said, Vicky, you know, who's going to win in a staring contest? I pick Lynn Thigpen, CCH Pounder, and we, like, argued for, like, ages. But, of course, Vicky won that argument, and we'll just leave it at that. So there you go. I've got Lynn Thigpen. So just one more time around the table, And just, you know, if you want to mention two or three very briefly that you haven't gotten a chance to mention, go right ahead. So we'll go to you, Tim, first. One more round.
So, I mean, Ossie Davis. I mean, Pearly Victorious. Oh, my God. Cotton Comes to Harlem, he directed. He was in the TV series Evening Shade. He was a civil rights activist. I'm Not Rappaport with Walter Matthau when they were doing those old, you know, they were older and doing those old age kind of movies. I mean, oh my God, he was in two African movies that he directed, and someone finally sent me one. I think it's called Countdown Cassini. I've been dying to see that movie. There's still another one I want to see. He directed this great movie called Black Girl, which is based on a stage play. Excellent movie. I mean, oh man, Ossie Davis is another huge, huge light.
One thing about Ossie Davis, you can't mention Ossie Davis without mentioning his wife, Ruby Dee. And you can't mention Ossie Davis without mentioning Bubba Hotep, okay? Gotta go with Bubba Hotep for Ossie.
Ah, what a great movie that is. Weird movie, but great, you know? It's great.
Anyone else you want to mention, Tim, before we take it over to Robert?
I'll mention Raymond St. Jacques. Who is in, I believe he's in The Comedians. He was in Cotton Comes to Harlem. He's Godfrey Cambridge's partner. He directed and starred in the movie Book of Numbers, which is a great, great film. If you haven't seen that, I recommend it.
Absolutely. I did a commentary watch on that a couple of years ago with my former partner, Stephen Montia. I love that movie.
That's a good movie. I'm so glad.
Yeah, that's basically sort of like The Sting, kind of. Kind of.
Yes. Kind of, yeah, yep.
No, from Raymond St. Jacques is someone to definitely mention. How about you, Robert? You got a couple you want to mention before we start wrapping things up here?
Well, yeah, I want to mention a couple of actresses in dedication of my mom. My mom passed this month. Not this month, but...
Oh,
the month
my
of
condolences.
February.
I didn't know that, Robert. Seriously,
but
my condolences.
Recently.
Oh,
no,
okay.
This happened like 7 years ago. But I'm saying she died in the month of February. This is like her, you know, anniversary of passing away. But, one of the ladies, so these ladies remind me of my mom and actually look a lot like my mom. So Diane Carroll is one of the ladies that everyone always said that my mom looked like and all this other stuff. So Diane Carroll always has a special place in my heart. And she was one of the first African-American females to have her own television series. That I know of is called Julia from 1968. And
I remember that. I used to watch that, actually. I remember that. Yeah.
Was it good? Any good?
Yeah, it was very good.
My mom,
you know who else was on that, too? James Earl Jones.
Oh, yeah, he's another good one to mention. Yeah, he's another good one, yeah. He's another actor that, yeah. James Earl Jones, and they played in a couple of movies together from what I was educated by. There was one film he was also in where it was almost like a black exploitation film. Her and Earl Jones played in where she was on welfare. She had to hide him because she had a boyfriend at the projects at the welfare house or whatever. I forget what the name of the movie is.
Claudine.
Yep. I remember watching it because my mom used to watch all of these old films. So, she's a very prolific. I remember her from as a kid looking at, what's the name of that? It's A Different World. And also, I was very young when they used to watch Dynasty.
I was just going to say, she was in a soap, I believe, in the 80s. Yeah, yeah.
You're right. She played one of the Dynasty ladies or whatever, from what I remember as a kid. Yeah. And she also recently, one of her recent things was White Collar, the television series. That was her, one of her last runs. I think she was kind of like a regular in that. And you ever heard of White Collar, the television series?
No, that one I don't know.
Yeah, it was kind of a hit, like, during the 2009 to 2014. And it was a pretty good film. It was pretty recent. So, but she played a character in there that was really good. And I think she was like a movie star. She was amazing. And also, Lena Horne is another actress that reminds me of my mom, and that a lot of people said my mom used to remind them of. And so Lena Horne is another actress. I remember of hearing of her and looking at old stuff and things like that, and people used to say my mom used to like Lena Horne, and so I used to kind of take notice of those things and of her whenever she played. So she played in a lot of older films and things like that. I remember her seeing her on Sesame Street, on a Sesame Street thing, and then remember seeing that. And so she's one of the old time Hollywood stars, and she was a pretty amazing woman, and just a beauty, and also Dorothy Dandridge.
Yeah,
so these are like the, I guess you, what would you call them, the sirens of Hollywood, or the movie stars?
Yeah,
yeah,
sirens.
What do you say?
That's good.
Yes, sirens of
that's
Hollywood.
That's definitely a good description, yeah.
Yeah, so Dorothy Dandridge is another one that people used to say my mom reminded them of. And so I just wanted to, call out these actresses in remembrance of my mom. And they hold a special heart for me as an actor because of that. So, yeah.
That's really cool, Robert.
Thank you.
That's very cool. Now, I want to just do a shout-out to three other actors that I do love, and there's someone we have not mentioned that we need to, and that would be William Marshall.
Oh, man.
William Marshall is basically known as Blackula,
yeah,
or the King
yeah.
of Cartoons.
Oh, yeah, that's what I heard, but yeah.
Yeah. Either that or the King of Cartoons on Pee Wee's Playhouse. But William Marshall was a great actor. And
wow.
I will tell you something. As dated as Blackula is in its sociopolitics,
right.
He's the most heartbreaking vampire ever to be put on screen. If you aren't crying at the end of that movie, and I kid you not, if you don't have tears in your eyes for William Marshall at the end of that movie, then something's wrong. Seriously.
Which one is so good.
In Blackula, go ahead, Robert.
You mean in Blackula
no.
or Scream Blackula?
No, the original. The sequel has Pam Grier, which is wonderful, but
yeah.
It's not nearly as good. He is so good
in the original.
This is a guy that was really, really underused. Also, I would mention Abby, where he plays,
Abby?
Which is the black version of The Exorcist, and he plays the Father Karras role in that.
Oh, wow.
But he was really underused. I mean, he's a blinker, and you'll miss him in Twilight's Last Gleaming, which is one of my favorite films. He has, I think, two lines in that movie, unfortunately. And he did a lot of TV, but he did a lot of of theater also. He played Othello. He was a great theater actor. And just amazing. And I mentioned this when we did our directors show, so I won't go into it too much. But Bill Duke. And all I have to say about Bill Duke, is to watch The Limey, and there is a scene where he plays a DEA agent, and he's uncredited, and he's behind a desk.
Oh, yeah.
And Terrence Stamp comes in and does this monologue, and it is a brilliant monologue. And it's just so well filmed and that sort of thing. And Bill Duke is just there sitting with his arms crossed. And so he gets done doing this Cockney accent and slang and everything. And Bill Duke looks at him and says, "There's just one thing I don't understand. And the one thing I don't understand is every motherfucking word that came out of your mouth."
So, yeah, you said.
And in one line, he steals the scene from Terrence Stamp. And let me tell you something. If you steal something from Terrence Stamp, you're a damn good actor. If you do it with one line, you're fucking fantastic.
Right.
And he's also a director. Remember I talked about Clarence Williams and that film, and Bill Duke directed that film. He's a great director. He was most recently that I saw him in Mandy. He had one scene in Mandy, and he just, like, took that movie and took it away from Nicolas Cage in, you know, crazy Nicolas Cage mode. Okay? If you take a movie away from Nicolas Cage, you're a damn good actor. Okay, so Bill Duke is, and also his first film was Car Wash, and he played that.
Oh yeah,
I love that. He was amazing.
Okay.
I love that.
Okay, and then I got to talk about Keith David. Okay, now do you know who I mean by Keith David?
Keith David, hold up. I got to see his face.
No, I got to see his face too. The name is not clicking in my head.
Okay,
I know what you're talking about. Yes. Awesome.
Okay, so, Keith David is one of those guys. Let me put it this way. He has 11 films that are either announced in pre-production or post-production right now. That's how busy he is. Okay?
He's probably the narrator of everything the CBS makes.
Exactly, and he's like the president in Rick and Morty,
his voice is great.
But the one thing I remember about him that I loved, I loved the movie Coraline, and he played the cat in Coraline, and that voice and everything, just like, God, I love this man. And he actually took over for Clarence Williams III in the second Tales from the Hood.
Really? Wow.
Yes, he did. Unfortunately, not a good movie, but he's great in it. He's, you know, but there's a guy, too, that you'll know him when you see him, and God knows you'll know the voice.
Oh, God, no.
You know, the voice is just amazing. And that's the one thing about most of these actors and actresses we've talked about tonight, is that, you know, their voices are just so unmistakable.
Right.
And that's not true of all of them, but there's so many. And of course, we haven't mentioned people like James Earl Jones, Sidney Poitier, Harry Belafonte.
Right.
We focused more on lesser known actors, but guys, I really want to thank you for being on. Now I'm going to, go over to you, Tim, first, and why don't you do a little bit of self-promotion here, and then we'll get to Robert.
So this is Tim Wickens again. I have a two Facebook movie groups, So Many Movies, So Little Time, and Hammer Maniacs and the Horror Beyond. So come and join us. Let's talk movies, enjoy movies, get the thrill of the artistry and just the and sadness, everything you get from a movie. So it's an honor to be here.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. So how about you, Robert? Tell us a little bit about Sketchy and what's going on with that.
Oh, hey, again. This is Robert again. As I said last week, I'm a filmmaker and actor. My first film that I've made was recent, now is called Sketchy, and it's based on a serial killing that happened in the 70s in the San Francisco Bay Area in the LGBTQ community, and it needs to be heard, so I thought I'd produce it, so I finished producing it. And now I'm targeting it to different festivals right now. So I just started last week submitting. So hopefully you'll see it at a festival near you.
So. Absolutely. And you keep us informed, you know, what festivals it's playing and so on and so forth. Definitely let us know. So right now we're going to do a little bit of what we'd like to call housekeeping. And tomorrow at 8 o'clock, Adam Ferenz will be hosting the Cathode Ray Mission, and they will be focusing on the films of John Ford. Then on Saturday, we're doing Down the Rabbit Hole with Rachel, with TC, myself, and Rachel, and we're focusing on Black music roots and performers, and we'll do our show there. On Sunday, TC is going to be premiering his own show, which is called Rock This Town, and that's at 8 o'clock, and that's a music show. On Monday, we're going to be doing Lime's Marsh. No, actually, no. Monday is we're going to be doing another commentary watch on a film for Black History Month, but we have not picked that film yet. But we'll be doing that at 8 o'clock. On Tuesday, Limes Marshall will be with us, and we'll be doing a show. Still haven't decided what we're doing on that yet, but we have a lot coming up. And then at the end of the month, on the 28th, which is Monday, we're going to have Rick Coleman on. Rick did a biography of Fats Domino. And he's also working on a book of the history of the music of New Orleans. So we're going to have Rick Coleman on. And then in March, we're going to be start celebrating women in film for Women's History Month. And we also are going to have a number of people on. I know that John Amplis will be on with us. We've got a couple other people. Donald Farmer is due in March. And we've got lots and lots happening. We also have a website now, which is www.deviantlegion.com. The website is still in we're still doing a little bit of tweaking, but you can certainly go in and get bios of all of us here. We also have our Patreon connected to that. And we're going to be changing a little bit in terms of our hosting ability. We'll be going with Zencastr here by, I'd say, mid-March, and certainly by the end of March. And that's going to increase our ability to get people in from Europe and Eastern Europe and such. And we're going to be working with that also. And one of the people that I have targeted once we get to Zencastr is Richard Stanley, and I have been talking, and hopefully we'll get Richard Stanley on. So we've got a lot going on with Deviant Legion. Again, I want to thank both Tim and Robert for being with us. As I said, you guys are always welcome back. Robert, I'm sure I'll probably call you one more time before the end of the month. I'm just letting you know.
Okay? No problem.
All right. And guys, I'm going to, again, thank everyone for listening. Again, thank you, Tim, and thank you, Robert, for being with us. And why don't we all say good night? Say good night, people.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Sleep tight.
Don't let the bed bug bite.
All
good
right,
night,
Paul,
everyone.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
Good night.